Really happy for Amelia. I think she probably headed out of here, but exciting day, and I'm sure her family is very proud of her and excited for the decision she made today. And it's going to go right in line with the sermon this morning. But I heard about a little boy. He went to church for the very first time with his parents, and he's sitting there, and he's following the rules, being quiet in church, right? And it's time for the offering trays to be passed. The little boy, he's just taking it all in. He's never seen this before. And the offering tray goes down one aisle and comes back the other. And they're getting closer to where he's sitting. And his dad reaches out. The usher hands the plate. The little boy looks at his dad and said, "Dad, you don't have to pay for me. I'm under five." We all have had moments where our motives of the heart are a little bit questionable. Maybe we acted on those motives. Maybe they just kind of were there. We thought about it, but we didn't do anything. We didn't enact those motives. But all of us are guilty of this. We all have moments where our motives of the heart are questionable. And that is why in the Beatitudes, as we've continued through the Beatitudes, that's why Jesus in the sixth Beatitude addresses the heart. And so let's read this Beatitude. Matthew 5, verse 8. "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." Just like the previous five and the next couple to finish over the next few weeks, the Beatitudes carry an idea of if and then. If you do this, then there is something that will happen. And here, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." Why is it that Jesus points out the heart? Why do we have a pure heart? Well, if you go back into the first century, you look at the Hebrew culture at that time in the Old Testament as well, the heart was very important. Nowadays, I think we think it's more here. It's more information, it's knowledge, it's understanding, and we don't place enough importance on the heart. But the Hebrew people, the Jewish people, they understood the heart was at the center of who you were as a person, where your desires come from, who you truly are as an individual. And so Jesus didn't say, "Blessed are the pure in mind or in thought," but he points out it goes directly to the heart. That's where it begins. And these Beatitudes, it's a Hebrew word that simply means to be blessed. That through these blessings that God can give, he can give us this happiness. And all of us, I've asked this question, how many of you wake up in the morning and want to be unhappy? None of us do that, right? We wake up in the morning and we want to be happy, and then life happens. And how do we navigate that? Because we try to make ourselves happy with earthly things that are temporary, that will fail us. And Jesus says, you can have a blessed life if you follow these Beatitudes. I can give you a happiness and a joy that the world can't take away from you. And it is everlasting. And Jesus says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." If you want to have a happy, lasting life that the world can't take away, then have a pure heart. The idea of a pure heart is matching who you are on the inside with who you say you are on the outside. Often we do it the opposite. We put on a facade, and it's not who we are in the heart. But if we have a pure heart, then we show who we are from our heart to the outside. And doing this, we have to be first attracted to Christ. He is our example. In this sermon, as he preaches, he's wanting the people to understand, follow after me. He goes into this long sermon in the beginning of the book of Matthew. But if you want to have a pure heart, fill yourself with me. Choose to be imitators of Christ because he is the perfect example of a pure heart. And so how can we have a pure heart? So that we can see God. I want to answer that question in four parts this morning. There's four parts to this. And the first is this, the condition of your heart. You have to focus on the condition of your heart. And here's the bad news. After Adam and Eve sinned, God, he's surveying his creation. And in Genesis chapter 8, this is what he has to say about you and me. Genesis 8, verse 21, "Every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood." I've known some pretty evil children. Being a bus driver, you run across a few. But then what happens? Children become teenagers. Anybody met some evil teenagers? Maybe you were that evil teenager. if you admit it to yourself, that something happens. We get out of our teen years and we kind of get out on our own, and then all of a sudden we become adults and we don't think about this anymore. We don't take into account that our actions, our inclinations of the human heart are evil. And God doesn't say sometimes or in certain situations, but he says all the time. In our fallen nature as people, our motives, our agendas, what drives us, they are never 100% pure. Even if you think you're trying your hardest. Why? Because we are imperfect people. God sees us, and he sees us completely. He knows the motives of the heart. He knows the thoughts in our mind. He sees them and he knows them. He knows what you do. And in Jeremiah 17, verse 9, it says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it?" Once again, it's the heart. That's where it all begins. It doesn't begin here in the mind with thoughts. It's your desire. It's your heart that you have to focus on. And who can understand it? We simply can't. But there's one who can, and that is God. He understands us, and he paves a way for us. And the real problem begins for you and I in this whole having a pure heart thing is when we start comparing ourselves to others. When we start comparing ourselves to others, and we examine our heart, the pureness in our heart, and say, there's a few flaws, but I'm a lot better than that guy. I've not done what she's done. I'm not going the direction they are going. I want to tell you a story about a 92-year-old man. He was known as Granddad Comer, and he had been a Christian for most all of his life. And at his old age, he had thought he needed to do more for Christ. He was a little bit limited because of his age and his frailty, but he had decided he was going to write a letter describing him coming to faith at the age of 18 and living his Christian life and how that changed his life. And so he sat down, he put pen to paper, and it was a simple letter, only 4 pages long. And then he told his children what he had done, and he told his children what he planned on doing was sending that letter to every household in the zip code that he lived in. Well, his children, they thought this was a bit of a stretch. They tried to talk him off of the idea. They said, you pay for the postage, you send this out. Most people won't know who you are. They'll just throw it in the trash. And you'll have wasted all that money. And they figured it up. There were 14,000 houses in the zip code. It was going to cost $10,000 for the postage. But he couldn't be talked off of it. And he printed out 14,000 copies of his 4-page letter. And he addressed them and he stamped them and he sent them out. And he, in fact, got some letters back of people saying that they were encouraged with what he had done. And then just a few months later, his health got worse. His children had to put him into an assisted living home. And he had a new plan because he moved to a new zip code. And Jesus says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." Maybe in your mind right now, you're thinking of someone who had a major influence over your life because of the pureness of their heart. And if that's the case, shouldn't we, knowing all that we know about Christ, want to be that example and have a positive impact on someone else? Because the sign of a pure heart is when you live this life to introduce people to Jesus. That is a sign of a pure heart because you knew how important it was for you and you know how important it is for someone else. So is introducing one person to Christ worth the cost? Was it worth $10,000? Would it be worth it if that person was your vulgar boss? Would it be worth it if it was your best friend from high school who had lived a wayward life? Would it be worth it if it was your daughter's fiance or maybe your stubborn spouse? But when we start comparing our pureness to others, we rarely start with comparing our pureness to a Granddad Comer or comparing our pureness to a Mother Teresa or the Billy Grahams of this world. Who do we typically compare ourselves to? We get pious, we look around, and we kind of smugly say, well, I'm better than my grouchy neighbor. Or that crude coworker that no one gets along with. Yeah, that's easy and that's simple. And well, Satan's the father of lies, and he wants to twist the truth and dilute the truth, causing our culture to believe that God grades on a curve. That as long as my list of good is longer than my list of bad, then he'll let me in. He'll show me favor. And he'll just grade me on a curve. He'll just overlook this and overlook that because I had done this and I had done that. Little boy came home from school one day and had a report card in his hand, and he handed it to his father. And the father opened it and he looked, and there were 4 F's and 1 C minus. And the dad looked at his son and said, how do you explain this? He said, well, I must have spent too much time on that one subject. we want this whole pureness and this judgment of our pureness to be based on that bell curve. Anybody remember the bell curve in school? Do they still use that today? Is that not a thing? I don't know. I'm too old, I guess. But remember the bell curve. As long as you did better than a majority, you were safe. How many of you liked living in the bell curve? You felt pretty comfortable in the curve. You knew, didn't do so great, but I'm better than all these. I'll slide in and everything will be just fine. But contrary to popular belief, heaven is not for a 75% pure heart. In fact, in heaven, it'll be a pure place where nothing impure will ever be. In Jeremiah 17, verse 10, I, the Lord, search the heart and examine the mind to reward each person according to their conduct, according to what their deeds deserve. Who are we compared to? God's not going to line us up and compare us to that guy and to her and to him. But God compares our pureness to his pureness. And he's not even judging our actions, but he is examining our hearts as well and what our agendas are. The second part is the cry of your heart. We have to understand the condition, but then what is the cry of your heart? What is most important? As a clear indicator, if you have a pure heart. When I think about the cry of your heart, I think of King David. Still regarded as the greatest king that Israel had ever had. And David did some miraculous and amazing things. God worked through his life. You might remember the introduction to him. Who did he slay? With this one stone and a sling. That giant Goliath. God was going to make him king, and he spared Saul's life several times, showing mercy. As king, he led God's people to honor God. But then he also had a rough season. He had a bad season in his life that led to lust and lies and deception and adultery and murder. That's a bad season. That season that he traveled through, we sometimes have bad seasons. That was a really bad season in David's life, the direction that he went. And after he traveled through this bad season, he examined himself. And he wrote Psalm 51, verse 10, where he says, create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. David knew that it was his heart that needed changed. It wasn't an action. It wasn't a thought. It wasn't a spoken word. It was the condition of his heart. That's what needed mended. That's what needed fixed. The purity of his heart was gone. And he needed to invite God back into the heart to change him as who he was. And that's, all these years later, just as true for you and I. That we have to examine the cry of our heart. Is the cry of our heart our own desires or God's agenda? And for David, he got off track. He went through a rough season. It all of a sudden became David's wants and needs and desires, not God's. And he asked God back in to give him that pureness of heart. And that same devil that lurked around in his heart wants to lurk around in ours as well. But we have to have the same mindset as David had, to start with purity in the heart. And here's the thing. All of us have impurities in our heart. They're going to be different We all struggle with different things, but they can be present. David was a powerful man. He was very powerful in many areas of his life, but when it came to making his heart pure, he knew that he was powerless. And if you think for one minute you can make your own heart pure on your own standing, it's foolishness. We have to invite God in. In Psalm 51, verse 17, "My sacrifice, O God, is a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, you, God, will not despise." What happens when we stumble and fall in life? For many, the first thing that we do is we run from God, either out of shame or maybe there's too much pride there, and we stumble and fall in life and we run from God. But here we see David in his situation. He ran to God. He knew it was only God that could change his heart, change his life, and he moved in the direction of purity. And what he knew, as bad as the things he did, he knew that God would not reject him. He knew as he ran towards God, God wouldn't put his hand out and say, "I don't think so. You've gone too far. You did too much." He knew that he would not be rejected. In Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23, Solomon says, "Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it." The heart, once again. You see, the heart is the control tower of our desires, our motives. Our motives, they originate in the heart. That's why it's so important that we focus on it. Now, I don't want you to think this, though. Being pure in heart doesn't mean you're going to be a perfect person. Being pure in heart means you recognize your flaws and you admit it to God. You be real and transparent with God and invite Him in. That is being pure in heart, not trying to live a perfect life. And resist the hide-and-seek game. The first time that impurity ever came into this world was with Adam and Eve. And what did they do after they'd eaten the forbidden fruit? They ran, they hid, and they were filled with shame. For you and I, it can be tempting to just run from God. But God says, "Come to me. Rely on the power of the Holy Spirit to return you to me, and I'll fill you with the purity that you need." The third is this, the cure for your heart. We have to have a cure for our heart because we can't do this on our own. In Psalm 24, verse 3, "Who may ascend the mountains of the Lord? Who may stand in His holy place? The one who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not trust in an idol or swear by a false god." Clean hands, a pure heart. If you go back to the Old Testament, there was a lot of washing of the hands to show cleanliness before the Lord, an outward expression about how you felt on the inside about God. If you went to the temple to worship, you washed your hands. If you prepared a sacrifice, you washed your hands. Remember back to 2019. If you had a bottle of hand sanitizer, it probably could last you a whole year, right? And then a year later in 2020, how many bottles of hand sanitizer were we going through? Just washing those hands and cleaning those hands. I think I remember looking down at my hand at one point thinking, I've whittled away layers of skin and I think I see answers to a test from a Spanish class in my freshman year of high school. Just cleaning and cleaning and cleaning the hands. I don't know about you ladies. Us guys in the men's restroom at restaurants and public places, they got this little plate with spikes at the bottom. And is that in the women's too? Or they just think us guys are really gross and we don't wash our hands ever? But you're balancing on one foot and you're trying to do this and then someone comes bursting through. You could have 5 broken noses during COVID, but you have clean hands, right? But the Old Testament, it was all about the outside. And then Jesus shows up and he says, "Blessed are the pure in heart." We have to have a clean heart, a clean conscience before God. He went and flipped the script. He changed things around. It's not about looking good on the outside. It's about the condition of the heart that leads to a life that is filled with blessing, that gives us the promise that one day we will see God. Instead of getting as close to evil as we can without knowing we won't go over, instead of doing that, why don't we just start taking steps towards purity? Because what God offers eternally is far greater than anything that is offered by the world that is temporary. And that should prompt us to walk in the Spirit, to keep taking steps towards a pure heart. In Hebrews chapter 10, verse 22, it says, "Let us draw near to God with a sincere heart and with the full assurance that faith brings, having our hearts sprinkled to cleanse us from a guilty conscience and having our bodies washed with pure water." You see, there's a cure there. What's required? That we have a sincere heart. A sincere heart means you recognize your sinfulness, your impurities, and then you have a full assurance. You truly trust. Just like Amelia came forward with a sincere heart and a full trust that Jesus can cleanse us. As filthy as our hearts can be, as sinful as we can be, Jesus can cleanse that. Acts 15, verse 9, "He did not discriminate between us and them, for he purified their hearts by faith." There has to be an element that we trust that Jesus can cleanse us. He can give us purity. And on our own, we can never be 100% pure. But because of Jesus, God can do a heart transplant. I remember talking to a guy, his father had to have a heart transplant. And after the surgery, he saw his father. He hadn't come to from the anesthesia yet, but he noticed his face was just really pink and almost red. And he got concerned. He found a doctor and said, "My dad's face is usually ashen and gray looking. And it's like red." And he said, "It's because he got a new heart." And Jesus came for us to exchange our heart for his so it could be pure. And that can fill us with a joy and a happiness that the world could never take away. And then the big crescendo, the culmination of the heart. Jesus says, "The pure in heart will see God." And some scholars believe that's not just going to heaven, but that's an everyday life. That when we are transformed and we live with a pure heart, people start to see glimpses of God in us. Representation of his son Jesus Christ as we live and breathe and walk this earth representing Jesus Christ. And that's what the world needs. The world needs more Christians who are intent on having a purified heart so that people can see God. But we definitely know that Jesus is talking about heaven. That the payoff for our purity is a reward, a completely pure heart for all of eternity with God. And this will always be a wonder until we get there. I wonder what the expression or the look will be on God's face when he sees you for the very first time. It makes me think about a wedding. You know, the bride, she gets, there's a lot of preparations. I'm glad I'm a man. Because for the ladies, there's a lot of preparations, right? To get ready for that big day. And it can start 2 years in advance, maybe. And there's a bunch of preparations to make that the perfect day and to be the perfect bride. And I've stood on the stage with a groom to my left, and when those doors open, there's been times I look at his face and it's almost like he doesn't recognize her because she had prepared so much and was so beautiful. And it's interesting in the Bible. The Bible in Genesis opens with a bride and a groom. And then the Bible in Book of Revelation, it closes with a bride and a groom. That one day we are going to see God, and he will see in us complete purity. But on this side of eternity, there's preparations to be made. In 1 John chapter 3, verse 2, John says, "Dear friends, now we are children of God, and what will we be has not been yet made known. But we know that when Christ appears, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is." That is the bride and the groom meeting for the first time. The bride being the church, you and I, fellow believers, brothers and sisters in Christ, being united with the groom who is Jesus. And then Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 13:12, "For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror, then we shall see face to face." What a day that will be, where that promise that those who are pure in heart will see God. That's a promise that Jesus gave. But this side of eternity, we have a responsibility as the bride of Christ to be preparing ourselves for the reward that he's going to give, because there will be a wedding feast that we'll be invited to that is far greater than any feast you've ever been a part of. And God is doing that just for you. Make a move towards purity. You know, you can make excuses or you can make progress, but you can't do both. We're going to give God praise for the fact that he sent his son, Jesus Christ, to give us purity. What happened earlier with Amelia being baptized? We saw her sins washed away, cleansed because of the blood of Christ and the promise of the Holy Spirit to guide her towards Christ for the rest of her life. That can be for you as well, if Jesus is not your Lord and Savior. And if you want to talk about that, I'd love to talk to you anytime. Let's stand together. Let's worship through this song.